Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the post-Cuomo self-congratulation period. As we notice that after Andrew Cuomo shocked the world and resigned, the Democrats were aerobically patting themselves on the back. They have a much higher standard in not tolerating sexual harassment or assault from their public servants. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, Bill Clinton. Even in 2016, they couldn't really spend much time on Bill Clinton, as they touted him as an aspiring first gentleman, as if that name would fit in any way, shape, or form. My column today is pushing for the next Cuomo shoe to drop. It's time for Chris Cuomo to resign from CNN. I don't think this will happen, but then I didn't think Hansy Andy was going to resign either. We should suspect that the pressure inside the Democrat world was intense to force Andy out. There's a lot of stuff that goes on inside Democrat circles that the news media isn't going to tell us. They love getting in and giving us all kinds of anonymous sources saying terrible things about Trump or whoever's the hate object of the moment. They're not so great at getting us anonymous TikTok stories on what exactly was said to Andrew Cuomo that got him to quit. We'll look for those. So on the night before Hansy Andy resigned, in that prized Cuomo primetime slot on CNN, it wasn't Chris. Chris is on vacation. It's his birthday week. So instead, CNN aired a glossy promotional special, or was it a free campaign commercial, titled Being AOC? CNN host Dana Bash was the publicist running this publicity spectacle. Let's hope Jake Tapper's eyes were rolling if he caught this. I mean, Dana Bash is his co-host on State of the Union on Sundays. She did not distinguish herself in this hour. Nowhere in this hour, as usual, was there any mention of the Cuomo scandals. I mean, it's not like AOC is from New York or anything. It's not like AOC isn't a young woman who could see herself in the pumps of these women who were assaulted by Cuomo. Just take a listen to all the bilge from Dana Bash as our Kyle Drannon assembled it.
What's it like to be one of the most famous politicians in America?
Hey, what's up? Love you back.
To be adored and reviled with seemingly equal passion. A strange existence for anyone, let alone a woman who, at age 28, catapulted from no-name New York City bartender to well-known member of Congress, featured on glossy magazine covers practically overnight. It's all part of being AOC.
The 31-year-old is outspoken, uncompromising, and not just navigating the political world, but trying to change it.
You have 12 million Twitter followers, 9 million Instagram followers, and they all know you by three letters, AOC. So what's it like to be AOC? At your age, a lot of women, and I will put myself in this category when I was your age, I was trying to fit into the world as it is, not trying to change it. Where do you get that confidence?
Even her friendships are famous. The so-called squad, House members Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, not just political allies, she says, but real friends.
I was able to find kinship and friendship and sisterhood.
When she's challenging fellow Democrats to embrace more progressive policies, breaking glass, she calls it, to get attention for an issue. Being Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez means being a celebrity and looking like one, red lips and all. She was featured on the cover of Vanity Fair in 2020 and even shot this tutorial for Vogue on her beauty routine.
Kyle nailed it by comparing this to a People magazine puff piece, or as they cited, a Vanity Fair puff piece. CNN here is just acting like another glossy celebrity magazine, a cog in the publicity wheel. This isn't a news interview. This isn't even stenography to power. It's hagiography to power. It is bowing and scraping. With Republicans, CNN is assault and battery. With Democrats, it's bouquets and flattery. It's always annoying when the liberal media hype builds on the liberal media hype. Oh, AOC. She was on the cover of Vanity Fair. She was on the cover of Rolling Stone. She was on the cover of Time Magazine. Yeah, that's all the media. You're all citing the media in one big circle jerk. Then CNN had this piece of the hour where, you know, AOC is this young, sexy Latina. So, of course, opposition to her must be racist, sexist, and a little bit creepy. Let's take AOC's critics, put them on the couch. We'll all play amateur psychologist. Analyze our obvious mental problems on the right wing. There's some sick stuff in our subconscious. This is where you remember, they're not spending a second of this hour on Andrew Cuomo and what Andrew Cuomo did, or putting the Democrat on the spot about what the other Democrat from New York did. No. We get socialist Seth Meyers coming to the aid of socialist AOC as usual.
A group of people that seem to have an obsession with you is those our friends over at Fox News. They talk about you a lot. Are you surprised with the speed at which they seem to have shifted all their attention and programming to you?
I mean, it's weird. Yeah. Like, why are so many grown men just obsessed with this, like, 29-year-old? I mean,
there was a moment on Seth Meyers' show while we were talking about Fox.
Yeah.
And you both looked at each other like...
I wonder why. Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, too,
Let's just talk turkey here. How much do you think it is that you're an attractive young woman, and that's part of...
Well, yeah. I mean, so much of what they're doing is so visceral, right? And their job is to, like, get at this very visceral, reactive place in people, and particularly men, but also tap these visceral lines along race and tap along this visceral lines along gender and youth.
Oh, poor AOC. She's so deeply misunderstood. Then, of course, since we're all flattery, bash turns to whether AOC is going to run in a primary against Chuck Schumer. And bash touts that post-it notes outside her office read AOC for president. This is all part of the flattery package. It's just amazing that conservatives who actually oppose socialism and this socialist icon, that CNN can't use a stronger word in this hour than progressive. No socialist, no leftist, no radical. She's just a star. They can't actually ask her a serious policy question about how we somehow need some kind of crazy $45 trillion Green New Deal. We can't ask her what it means for her to end fossil fuels. What does that mean? No, instead, Bash is talking about, ooh, AOC made a makeup video for Vogue. Yeah, that's really striking a blow for feminism there, Mrs. Bash. Now, of course, she's not married to Jeremy Bash anymore, the Obama servant. But it makes you think of those commercials for Mrs. Dash, right? Mrs. Bash adds spice to all your favorite Democrats. Mrs. Bash. You have to wonder who's the next person that they're going to idolize in the Dana Bash Being series. I mean, we can expect it to be being Ilhan Omar, being Nancy Pelosi. Because, you know, if Dana Bash does anything like being Nikki Haley, they'll get just trashed because the CNN audience can't stand that. I mean, Dana Bash had this whole series about badass women. And the minute you find one Republican to be badass, then all the CNN regulars are very upset. Because let's face it, they think CNN is their territory. They think PBS is their territory. They think NPR is their territory. Obviously, they think Facebook and Twitter should be their territory. And of course, that's the way that that's how you get a program like being AOC. You're pandering to people who you want to come to your network. We want to take all the crazy people on Twitter who love AOC, especially those young people. We're going for the young audience. You can just see the focus group ideas turning in here. How do we do something to mobilize? We need Gen Z and millennial viewers on CNN. I know. Let's kiss AOC's ring. That'll bring some people over. Well, that might be a rating strategy, and Lord knows CNN needs a rating strategy. But it's certainly not a strategy to make yourself look like a news channel or to make yourself look like the mainstream. The Democrats are getting less mainstream all the time, and the liberal media are marching to the left right alongside them. These are people now who think Joe Biden is hopelessly moderate. These are the people on Twitter who are now running around suggesting that Caitlin Collins belongs on One American News because she asked Joe Biden about Andrew Cuomo. And she basically said, can you say Andrew Cuomo did a hell of a job on something like infrastructure when in the meantime he was abusing women in his office? And the crazy liberals on Twitter can't stand that CNN would ask a contrary question, a gotcha question to Biden. That's the people that CNN are pandering to right now. And they have the audacity to suggest Fox News has a pile of crazy viewers that they pander to. Please. We try in every blog post about television quote-unquote news to give you sponsors at our Conservatives Fight Back page for you to offer comments to the advertisers who fund this propaganda, like Liberty Mutual. Now, of course, Liberty Mutual's all over television. They're on CNN, they're on Fox, they're on the Game Show Network, so maybe they're not paying as much attention. But I think these advertisers do care if you say, I'm upset that you're advertising on this particular program or when this liberal uncorked this defamatory nonsense. So if you want to know what you can do, that's one avenue, is go to the Conservatives Fight Back page on mrc.org. I am pleased to welcome to the Newsbusters podcast what we might call an original cast member of the Newsbusters crew, Mr. Mark Finkelstein, joining us from the beach in North Carolina. You know, Mark, I went back to search for the first Finkelstein blog, and it was in early August 2005, which I think we could call training camp in football terms, when we were just getting our toes wet in the blogosphere. Or you could say, this always, of course, reminds me of one of Mark's first big blogs was, what was her name again? The canoe lady?
Michelle Krasinski.
That's right. She had a later career at CNN after being at NBC. But that was such a great clip. And Mark got this for us about how she was in a canoe talking about flooding. And then two guys walked by and the water was ankle deep.
Yeah.
Classic. That was
busted.
That was the early days. Before we get into your latest reporting on the craziness at MSNBC, I wanted to note you used to live in New York when you started with Newsbusters. You were up in New York. You went to Cornell and Harvard Law School. Geez, they gave me a job here, and I only went to Bemidji State. But we've discussed today, CNN devoted an hour to polishing the no-doubt designer shoes of AOC. Did you ever think that we would see CNN doing these puffball propaganda pieces for socialists?
You know, I think there has been a sort of devolution of CNN from being something resembling an actual news network to now being pretty much just straight up liberal commentary 24/7. I can't distinguish between Dana Bash, who did this interview, with any of their primetime lineup of overt commentators. And it seems that like Dana is sort of working her way through the squad. I mean, you know, she interviewed Cori Bush, the latest, greatest member of the squad,
right,
over the weekend on the State of the Union. And it was an adoring piece there, you know, describing how Cori Bush had thrown a quote unquote lifeline to millions of Americans by reinstating the, you know, no eviction rule. And now, you know, she moved on to AOC. So, you know, presumably she'll work her way through the squad, and we're looking forward to her special with Ilhan Omar or, you know, Rashida Tlaib, and, you know, she can mystify the world, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember when CNN in, say, the 1980s was trying really hard to be sober. I wouldn't say centrist, but I would say back when I started here at MRC in 1989, CNN was almost trying to be less biased than ABC and CBS and NBC. I mean, they were almost dry. And so maybe people don't notice anymore because we know where CNN's been since, say, 2015, for example. But I don't think the young people out there understand just the dramatic twist and turn we have seen over the decades.
Yeah, and again, I have to say, on the one hand, yes, it's annoying to see, you know, their glorification, you know, of AOC. But on the other hand, it, you know, Nancy Pelosi has been, for conservatives, the face of the Democratic Party. And I think that's kind of running its course. And so to the extent that CNN wants to raise AOC's profile even more and help us make her the face of the Democrat Party, I say thank you.
Right. Well, I just watch this hour and it reminds me of the old Charles Emerson Winchester character on MASH who used to remember sitting in Korea about the old servants when they were bathed in the glow of utter servility. You know, reminds me of these, of interviews like this. So most days, Mr. Mark Finkelstein, you specialize in the early morning TV shows for us, and you have logged many, many Morning Joe items over the years. And it seems a little funny that in the Bush years, they would tout that Dick Cheney watched the show, like they were some kind of reasonable salon, like a civilized NPR type show. And that is not at all what we're getting these days. Again, take us back to 2015, although, of course, we'll all remember how supportive Joe and Mika were of Trump in 2015, and then they flipped. But on Monday, I think you should have caught everybody's attention, certainly caught our attention, by drawing this picture and making this clip package of Mika Brzezinski just losing her ever-loving mind on the so-called death cult of Ron DeSantis.
Now these same ghoulish death cult figures are fighting vaccines. We are flooded every day with sad stories of Americans who believed the lies fed to them by death cults. And in Florida, we have a governor more interested in playing politics than saving lives, the DeSantis variant. That's why nearly one in four new COVID cases are coming out of Florida. Almost all of these hospitalizations and deaths would have and could have been avoided if misguided Americans had not followed the crazed teachings of a growing death cult. It's pretty easy, and they won't do it. That's death cult material. Dr. Hotez, there are a lot of people who are choosing to be a part of this death cult. People are just completely poisoned by the Trump death cult of parents that are falling into a death cult. Protect your child if you can't protect yourself. If you feel like you, for some reason, want to be a part of this death cult.
Joe Scarborough, Mika's husband and co-host, has had this shtick now for years of climbing up on a hobby horse of a phrase and just absolutely riding it into the ground. So, for example, back when Trump Doral was being considered as a host site for an international meeting, Joe went off on this riff about bed bugs there. And, you know, he managed to mention bed bugs 18 times in the course of a clip. Or he'll call somebody a fascist, you know, 50 times. Or he will repeat ad nauseum all of Trump's somewhat optimistic statements about how the coronavirus would go away when it first appeared on the scene. And so apparently Mika, you know, has been sufficiently exposed to the Scarborough virus that she contracted it. And so, you know, she went off on her own riff about death cult, and we counted her using the phrase death cult 8 times in a relatively short segment to describe in general politicians and just members of the public who remain dubious about masks and the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could be a reasonable liberal platform and suggest that we think, you know, conservative governors like Ron DeSantis are disrespectful of the science. But that's just far too tame for this screaming. I mean, DeSantis is somehow Jim Jones of the People's Temple, just like Brian Stelter tried to do to Trump a week or two ago. To me, it's going from saying, well, we're skeptical of something, or we're skeptical of government mandates for something. Like, we're skeptical of the government mandating mask use for school kids. And somehow that becomes an intentional plot to kill people.
Yeah. And you know, Joe pretty much has just one gear. I mean, he's like in overdrive screaming at the screen. Mika has this odd twist where, you know, if folks watch the death cult clip, she veers between literally getting choked up and barely being able to get her words out because she's so emotional about it, to then also screaming at the camera and saying, you know, 1/4 of the coronavirus cases in the United States are in Florida, you know. So she has a broader emotional gamut, I would say.
Well, and I think there's a difference between cases, and the media always hammers on cases. But, you know, the real focus here is on hospitalizations and deaths. And I think that there is, obviously, there is a concern here in that the new pattern with the Delta variant is that we're seeing more young people in the hospital wards. But you would think that we had somehow fallen completely backwards into unvaccinated 2020, the way these people are acting. And they're using the same tactics against DeSantis or Greg Abbott that they used against Trump. Here on Tuesday, we handled death cult on Monday. Then on Tuesday on Morning Joe, DeSantis is a COVID criminal. You have Eugene Robinson, one of the regulars, the Washington Post columnist, going on this Trump-like jaunt.
Sickening and killing your political supporters seems to me that the stupidest and most short-sighted political strategy I've ever heard of. Yet that's what DeSantis is doing. And, you know, he wants to inherit the Trump wing of the Republican Party, and so he's being Trumpier than thou. Do you really want your child to be sick in the hospital, sick enough to go to the hospital with COVID? Do you want any of the children in your state to suffer that fate? Yet that's what DeSantis is insisting on. He is insisting that pediatric wards fill with COVID patients. It is outrageous to say the least, and frankly, it's criminal. It should be criminal. I mean, he's harming people.
I mean, this is the kind of language where they're basically trying to suggest that Republican governors are intentionally killing people.
Right, and don't liberals like to decry the criminalization of politics? But here, Gene Robinson is literally criminalizing Ron DeSantis's politics. And you also, you know, quoted Robinson as saying it was outrageous what DeSantis is doing. But the liberal outrage is very selective because, you know, as mentioned in that item, where do you ever hear any outrage about the countless thousands of illegal immigrants coming across our southern border who either have the coronavirus or have not been tested for it and are released into the general population? You know, when's the last time we heard about that on MSNBC or CNN?
Well, in reality, yes. So Breonna Keeler did this item the other day where she was very upset that conservative media was demonizing the COVID positive migrants. They're not responsible for spreading COVID, even if I think NBC had a story where they said 18 to 20% of the migrants are COVID positive. And they're being trucked all over the place. This is a story that, for the most part, the liberal media doesn't want to do, except for doing this fact-checking about how you can't really blame the COVID migrants. This is, again, where fact-checkers tend to be used to sell liberal narratives. I was looking this up today. This is PolitiFact, Mark, when it comes to politicians. Andrew Cuomo's page, he has 20 mostly true or true, 10 mostly false or false. He's twice as honest or truthful than he is dishonest. Now you go to Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis actually is not bad compared to a lot of Republicans. 7 true or mostly true, 13 false, mostly false, and then 1 pants on fire. Andrew Cuomo doesn't have a pants on fire. But here's the other thing. Let's look at it this way. PolitiFact has no page for Anthony Fauci. PolitiFact has no page for Rochelle Walensky, the current head of the CDC. PolitiFact has a page for the CDC with 1 true and 1 mostly true. And I believe, I didn't check this today, Jen Psaki doesn't have a page on PolitiFact. And this is where you just say, how incredibly selective these people are in prosecuting information or misinformation about the coronavirus.
And again, this notion of selective outrage, you know, we know that the one religion in America that is fair game for the liberal media is Christianity. And we had an example of that today on Morning Joe.
Yes.
Kerry Sanders was reporting from the school openings that are now occurring in Florida. The new school year is beginning. And he mentioned speaking to a mother who said that in reliance upon her faith, she was not masking her children going into school. And Joe Scarborough ran with that. He repeated Mika's quote-unquote death cult notion, and he suggested that this mother was relying on, quote, Jesus to protect her children. Now, in fact, the mother, or at least Kerry Sanders, had not identified the religion of the mother. But of course, you know, if you're going to be attacking a religion and you're in the liberal media, you're going to assume that it's Christianity. And, you know, I pose the question, would Joe Scarborough possibly have done this if somebody had identified, as, for example, you know, a follower of Islam? I somehow doubt that. But if it's Christianity and somebody's counting on Jesus to protect their child, well, that's fair game.
Well, and I would say as a Christian, then I was going to wear a mask when we needed to, when everybody told you to wear a mask until we had vaccinations. I went out and got vaccinated because you can't say, I don't think it's wise necessarily to say, well, Jesus will protect me no matter what I do. You got to take some precautions. But this is just sort of the sneering approach that they have, is that they're going to presume, well, the Trump base are the anti-vaxxers. As you suggest, they can't imagine there are any Islamic anti-vaxxers. They can't imagine there are any secular hippie anti-vaxxers, although there's thousands or millions of them. Here's Scarborough, who represented what they call the cracker counties of the panhandle in Florida. And they just have this contempt. You blogged this when they... Scarborough was suggesting that Ron DeSantis was pandering to voters that he called Cletus the slack-jawed yokel from The Simpsons. I mean, that's their contempt. And so, yes, it is quite easy for them. That they're really saying is Cletus the Christian slack-jawed yokel.
And, of course, another demographic that the liberal media is very hesitant to mention in connection with resistance to vaccination are African Americans. And, you know, to the extent that they are ever mentioned, it will almost always be mentioned at the same time, you know, the history, which is a sad and tragic and outrageous history of African Americans being used in various medical experiments going back, you know, close to 100 years. But even so, I would think, as, you know, as just as a pure matter of demographics, African Americans are a significant cohort among, if you want to call them, anti-vaxxers or people resistant to getting vaccinated.
Yes. And of course, these people claim to be against COVID misinformation. Well, I would posit that it's COVID misinformation to say Ron DeSantis wants you dead. It's Ron DeSantis' strategy to kill his own voters, which is what they said about Trump. This all strikes me, and you'll certainly remember this as a Newsbuster alum, Ed Schultz running around saying, You know, the Republicans, they like it when you get the cancer. They like it when nobody's going to come help you and you die. You know, I mean, it's really in the same vein as all of that. Mark, we should note, you have found it's not only MSNBC that's claiming Republicans are a pack of killers. CNN put on this Democrat strategist named Michael Starr Hopkins, who suggested Republicans don't want to just block the Voting Rights Act. They want to roll back environmental standards. They want to basically turn Florida into a morgue. I mean, what kind of imagination are these people using?
Yeah, and the irony is that, and thank you for reminding me of that, that this Democratic strategist, Michael Starr Hopkins, was brought on as an example of a centrist Democrat. He was actually brought on to comment on the Illinois primary, Democratic primary between Nina Turner and I think it's Chantel Brown.
Oh, that's Ohio.
Ohio. Did I say Illinois? Yeah, Ohio. Yeah. And Chantel Brown. And he was, you know, he was on the Chantel Brown team, essentially. And yet somebody who represents the quote unquote moderate wing of the Democratic Party is also accusing DeSantis of wanting to turn Florida into a morgue. So that tells you how far left the center has gone in the Democratic Party.
Well, and I think this is, yes, this is the Democratic establishment, which is what they said Chantel Brown was part of, because she was backed by Biden, or she backed Biden. She was backed by Jim Clyburn, who backed Biden. Just because they're called the establishment, yes, doesn't mean they're centrist, even though that's the way, of course, yes, Democrat cable channels are going to suggest that's the case. It was funny to me in that particular case that, yes, you had Nina Turner, who, when it came to discussing voting for Biden, basically compared it to eating a bowl of feces, which Chantel Brown apparently ran that into the ground. And yet, if you'll recall, Nina Turner's got a file on Newsbusters. Nina Turner is brought on to these cable news networks to be the reasonable person, which again shows you where these cable networks are.
Yeah. And then, of course, Nina Turner also dabbled in, I don't know if you could call it anti-Semitism, but she suggested that some sort of like evil money had, you know, flooded into the campaign, and that's what defeated her. And I think she was pointing the finger at a donor who is, you know, I guess you could say a pro-Israel donor. But, you know, this is in line with the sort of squad message about how, you know, Israel and by extension Jews are, you know, mystifying the world and have, you know, their fingers and everything. So, again, this is Nina Turner, who, again, as you pointed out, at times has been promoted as, you know, a reasonable voice of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, yes, inside the Democratic Party, you still have a lot of people who might be considered pro-Israel or would still consider Israel an ally instead of some sort of, you know, atrocious human rights violator. It's always amazing to me that these people can be so anti-Israel and then so pro, I don't know, Iran. You know, Biden's going to have now a summit in the, this is what the liberal media is touting today. Biden's going to have a summit on democracy against autocracy. Oh, and by the way, we got to really get that Iran arms deal promoted.
You know, again, thinking ahead to 2022 and 2024, you know, what will be the Democrat platform? You know, we're going to bring Iran back into the picture. You know, we're going to promote abortion without limitation. We're going to, you know, go after your guns. And again, Biden, you know, deconstructing, if you can, if you dare, something that he said recently, it seemed to be suggesting that he'd be going after handguns, not just the dreaded ARs. So, I mean, they have quite a platform to run on.
Well, and this is the interesting thing that we've noticed for many, many years. We would tell people, if you go back and study the kind of stuff we were doing, you know, way back in the 90s, when we just had a monthly newsletter, they used to focus incessantly on the Republican platform debates. So you would get story after story about how the Republicans were having a debate over what to say in the platform about abortion. I believe it was in 92, we counted they had 60 stories on the Republican platform plank on abortion. And they had one of the networks had one on the Democrat platform plank on abortion. So, yes, this is one of those questions where they just don't want to focus on whatever the Democrat platform says. And they all acted upset, I think, back in 2020 because the decision that the Trump team made was, yeah, we're basically going to just take the 2016 platform and say, yep, ditto. They, you know, and now, do any of us remember them having an intense focus on what the Democrat platform said? I mean, maybe we're at a point where we all realize that those are sort of sterile talking points that don't matter. But I mean, again, they always wanted to, this is the liberal media. They always want to define the Republicans as a crazed pack of extremists. And the Democrats are always the sensible mainstream, no matter what it is they're actually proposing.
And let's not forget, among their, I mean, very upfront platform planks is the Green New Deal. And, you know, Biden has somewhat tiptoed around it, but he's also come out, you know, he wants us to be, you know, free of fossil fuel automobiles by, you know, some crazy date. I forget if it's 2030 or 2050, but he's heading in that direction too. So again, you know, vote Democrat, we'll take your cars away.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and just the trillions and trillions of dollars they want to spend, you know, what's it, estimated like $45 trillion. And in, yeah, there's massive spending. And there's not just regulation, as you suggest, there's basically a push to get rid of, you know, Al Gore's dream to get rid of the internal combustion engine automobile. It's kind of crazy. Let me wrap with this. Since you live outside the Beltway, now, of course, we here at the MRC are technically outside the Beltway here in the office, but, you know, I think we could, in mindset, you could see us as part of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia axis. But, you know, is there anything you can share from the local cafes or bars or, you know, where you hustle and bustle about the, you know, the Biden-Harris buzz in your neck of the woods?
You know, I live in Brunswick County, North Carolina, which is in the extreme southeastern portion of the state on the coast. And it is a heavily Republican area. So I live in a small town called Caswell Beach. And I have to say, you know, you could say it's a little Republican conservative beltway of our own here. So, you know, you could accuse me of living in something of an echo chamber, but, you know, nevertheless, I would say, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned Kamala Harris, because I think, you know, we talked about AOC as the face of the Democratic Party. I think we'd be very happy to see Kamala Harris as an increasing face of the Democratic Party. And of course, potentially as the nominee in 2024, if not assuming the presidency sometime before then.
Yeah, there's this whole idea. You know, she was front and center yesterday for a little bit when the Senate passed the so-called bipartisan infrastructure plan. She was sort of there and put on national TV. But for the most part, she really has been quite absent. I mean, we can all make this joke about she was named the czar of the border. And I think we all know the networks have tried very hard to not do the story of the border. And the only time they've really covered the border in any significant way in the last couple of months is when Kamala Harris finally went to the border, you know, took the camera pictures of being at the border, not just going to Central America and jaw-jawing about how we should try to keep them there, but going to the border. You know, this is something we are still working on here, Mark, and that is the notion that we have a border crisis, and they're just not interested, which makes you begin to think, do they really consider this a crisis, or is this a Rahm Emanuel moment? Are they exploiting this crisis as an opportunity?
I think they absolutely are. I think they are, in fact, willing to accept a certain amount of short-term political flack over their mismanagement of the border in return for letting hundreds of thousands and eventually millions of, you know, as Mark Stein likes to call them, undocumented Democrats enter the country. So, yeah, I mean, they absolutely want to change the demographic by introducing, you know, countless and uncounted new immigrants into the country who they rightly assume, at least in the short run, will tend to vote Democrat.
Well, and as, you know, Jorge Bonilla would tell you here at MRC Latino, this doesn't always work out the way they expect it to. And we certainly saw in 2020 a disturbing amount of Latinos voting for Trump. And So that doesn't always work. And I'm not a fan of this whole idea that they're trying to replace the whites. But we've heard this for years. They're constantly doing this, touting the whole idea that whites are going to become the minority. And they're so excited about it because they think that is the quote unquote, you know, capital P, capital F, the progressive future.
Yeah. And, you know, you make a good point that they should be careful what they wish for. Trump did, you know, surprisingly well in 2020 among Latinos. And currently in the recall election in California, the latest statistic I saw was that 54% of Latinos are, you know, would vote to recall Newsom. So things change in politics.
It doesn't always work out the way they expect it to, but there's certainly a way they expect it to, and they're the so-called mainstream media always seems to be lining up with what the Democrat political strategy is. Well, thank you for joining me, Mark. If you want to get more of everything Mark has to write about what's going on in the morning or everything else we're doing here, come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.